sure I'm probably wasting your time.
Ah, heaven forbid, no. It's a lovely day outside. Actually, it is. I like the rain.
Refreshing. But I usually start when I interview someone. I didn't ask your husband his birth date and where you were born.
Where he was born.
Well, so this is for you. I didn't ask him, but I'm asking you now.
Well, I was born on February 16th, 1910, in Folkestone.
I'm good.
Folkestone, thereabouts.
Well, it's not quite normal. Folkestone
camp,
yeah. Yeah, I've been to Folkestone, actually. It's not a neat little place. I was on the beach, I was throwing rocks. It's not a pebbly beach, isn't it, Folkestone? Okay.
My father was building the harbour there. He was the engineer who designed and built Folkestone Harbour.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I was born there.
You didn't live there, you didn't.
No, we lived in London.
You've mentioned quite a few times to me that you came from a rather privileged class?
No, very much.
Was an engineer, because that was a profession, was he still a privileged?
I would say, yes. Mm-hmm.
What about your mother? What did she do? Where did she?
My mother was a typical English lady, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Never had done anything. Except have a reasonably good time and get married.
How many children did you have?
Three. Mm-hmm.
Of which you were the youngest, don't
you? Yes, youngest. Mm-hmm.
Brothers and sisters?
I have two brothers.
Were they old enough to have seen action in the First War? Or?
No.
Did your father join up in 1914?
My father was also in a class that they didn't want him to join up, being an engineer.
Mm-hmm.
But he did finally join the Navy, and as an engineer, he was sent to Archangel to clear the ice out of the harbour.
Mm-hmm.
And because Archangel was used during the First World War.
Extensively, yeah.
Through the winter.
Mm-hmm.
And my father received the last two medals ever personally presented by the Tsar before he abdicated.
Indeed.
Wasn't that interesting?
Yeah, what kind of medals were they?
Well, I only remember one, and it was the St. George. And I don't know what the other one was.
No.
Okay.
That's fascinating, isn't it?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
Well, how long did he stay after?
He must have been there for quite a few months, because it was through the winter months that he was helping with the harbour.
What would he do? Dynamite the ice?
I suppose so. I never heard too much about it. My father was a very famous engineer.
What was his full name?
Arthur Coode, C-W-D-E.
So what kind of name is Coode? Where is it from?
Cornish. Mm-hmm. He was the head senior partner in the Cooden Partners, which is the name of the engineering firm, which had been originally started in the 1850s by my great-grandfather. And my brother has just retired. He's the last of the line.
No one follows?
Well, he has a son who's an engineer, but unfortunately he decided to work for an opposition firm. Hopefully one day he'll come back to me. Cool film, yeah.
It still continues, but it's under different.
Yeah, still the same name.
Mm-hmm.
Still the name, Cool Partner. Yeah.
Any other uncles or relatives in the First War?
I lost one uncle. My father's oldest brother was killed during the First War.
Was he infantry?
He was army, yes. I had other uncles who were in the Indian Army and in the Indian Police Force, but I don't think any of them were actually in France.
Mm-hmm.
No.
I suppose for your social group it was very common to have relatives in the Indian Army especially.
Yes. Yeah, you're right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Your father, I guess, served throughout the war. Was he?
Yeah, well, I don't think he joined up in the Navy till probably later,
mm-hmm.
16 or 17, but of course I was too young, I don't remember.
What did you do throughout the war?
We just lived, actually we lived at Weybridge.
Which is where?
South west of London. Quite close to the famous Vickers airfield.
Mm-hmm.
We saw German Zeppelins going over and German aeroplanes going over. They were never doing anything, but they were zooming around. They were after the Vickers.
Mm-hmm.
Is he all right, Governor?
Oh, yeah.
I've got a mouthful of bread here. Excuse me.
Good, I hope you're enjoying it.
It's delicious, actually. I love fresh bread with fresh butter. Well, not fresh bread, but butter.
Mm. Yes, it's good.
Did you stay in London as you were growing up?
Well, in 1919, we moved to Beckenham. Beckenham, which is Kent, and south east London, which is only 9 miles out of London. I spent practically all my young life after I left school in London.
Did you have to go through that process that we read called coming out?
I never did. I went to a finishing school in Paris for 2 years,
mm-hmm.
and this was considered, you know, we never learned anything. We just had a good time. We really did. Had a very good time. Then my father took me down to Nigeria. I had a month in Nigeria. He built all the big harbors on the west coast of Africa.
Sierra Leone, places like that?
Mm-hmm. And the Lagos,
mm-hmm.
Takoradi, Port Harcourt.
I take it then that you're familiar with some of the works of Graham Greene and perhaps Mr. Johnson?
Graham Greene.
The Heart of the Matter, which is set in Sierra Leone,
I think. Yes. Oh, I just love his books.
Oh, yeah.
Have you read his latest one, Jacques?
No, it's caused quite a stir in France, often, especially in the south.
I read it a week after I came back from Cannes.
Mm-hmm. Did you think it was as strong as the French government has made out?
Well, of course. I living on somebody's yacht, I had no way of saying, you know.
Mm-hmm.
But I found it very interesting. I love his books.
Mm-hmm.
They're just great.
Have you read his latest novel, Monsignor Quixote?
No, I don't think so.
It's kind of different. It's light. But it's sort of based very closely upon the Cervantes novel. And it's sort of a modern-day Don Quixote.
Oh, yes.
He plays a character much like the fellow in... what's that Mexican book? He's a drunk priest, anyways. Which Graham Greene seems to write a lot about. The Roman Catholic influence, I guess.
I guess so, yes.
Yeah. Yeah, I like Graham Greene, but and Mr. Johnson, that's why I brought him up, Joyce Carey. It was set in Nigeria, and it was about an engineer who was building bridges in Nigeria, and the local color, the local characters.
Really?
I'll loan it to you if you like. It's a very well-known novel.
Yes. Well, my father built the bridge over the Benue River,
mm-hmm.
and it's rather interesting. I had a friend who went out to Nigeria quite recently, and she said, I'll get your picture of Port Harcourt and the Benue River, the bridge of the Benue River,
oh,
yes.
Mm-hmm.
And but they wouldn't let her photograph it because it hadn't been constructed by a Nigerian. They wouldn't let her take a photograph of it.
The absurdities of post-war.
I traveled the whole way around Nigeria with my father.
Mm-hmm.
He, one of his best friends was the general manager of the Nigerian railways. He was a Canadian, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And he just tacked on a coach, onto his coach, and we just hitchhiked. Took us a whole, I think it must have taken us about 10 days. We went right up to, what's that town right up in the north? I've forgotten the name of it now. We had these lovely red mud-built houses. And then we came down the other side, down to Port Harcourt.
Mm-hmm.
This was...
Well, how old were you, bud? Almost 20?
I was 18.
18?
Mm-hmm.
How did it all strike you? Because it was a rather rough, ignorant country.
Well, it was. I still think the average native is better off than they are now, but it's very hard for me to judge because I had a very sheltered life even there.
Mm-hmm.
State of government house, you know, wasn't allowed outside unless I was with the governor's wife or someone else.
Yeah.
And all I had my heart set on was having a good time, which is what I did, of course, because there were no single women out there.
Mm-hmm.
Very few, anyway.
So at the party, you were danced off your feet?
Absolutely. And I don't think that at 18... I was about to dig my teeth into the political side of Nigerian life.
I don't think too many people are willing to do that when they're 18 or 30 between the wars.
I was a typical, what you might call a 1920 flapper, you know.
Were you
had
really?
My heart set on having a good time.
Yeah.
You've seen the series, Upstairs, Downstairs?
Yes, occasionally.
Oh, that's the kind of life I lived.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Sort of carefree.
Yeah, absolutely.
And you had financial
security.
Security.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
No worries that way. How about education? I guess it wasn't fashionable for a woman to go to university at all, was it?
No. No, I didn't care about that. I didn't like school. My father didn't consider it was necessary for a girl to have an education. He said there was only two things a girl need know. He didn't know I was going to end up as a farmer's wife. That was, one thing was how to make a good cocktail, and the other was how to make a good salad.
Can you make either?
I can now.
What sort of cocktails would you
do? Oh, well, I don't know. In those days, of course, one used to drink White Ladies and Gibson Girls, what they call. I don't remember now. But I don't think I ever mixed cocktails anyhow. Because here again, you know, he said I should know how to make a cocktail, but he wouldn't let you drink hard liquor. Sherry and wine.
Well, for me, a sherry is a cocktail, and that's about as far as I get anyway.
Yeah. But he didn't believe in education. I went to boarding school for 5 years,
mm-hmm.
where all I learned was French and Latin, because I was no good at anything else.
Mm-hmm.
So I wasn't interested in it.
Mm-hmm. What about your brothers? Were they...
Oh, they went to typical English public school, of course.
Which one?
They both went to Repton.
I've heard that, actually.
Repton's up near Derby.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
It's a very famous school.
Mm-hmm. Then they went to college. One of my brothers went to King's College, and the other one went to the City and Guilds College in London, which is a typical engineering college.
So they both followed your father?
My father went to Cambridge, but he said that unless you're good at sports, there's no point in going to Cambridge or Oxford.
Mm-hmm.
You might as well just get your
degree.
He was a double blue, my father.
Which meant what? Double blue.
Double blue, well, if you represented Cambridge in any sport, you got a blue for it.
It's like getting a letter.
I meant to.
North American. Yeah.
And he played cricket for Cambridge and he played soccer for Cambridge.
Mm-hmm.
And I wish he was alive now because his great granddaughter plays soccer for UVic. And he was such a chauvinist, you know, he would
shudder at the idea.
I know, times have changed, haven't they, for the better, in that way, for the better.
Oh, I think so.
I think it was pathetic the way women sat on in those days.
Mm-hmm. And you were one of the lucky few who actually had a degree of freedom because of money and background.
Oh, I was lucky. I realized, you know, that my youth was spent in a beautiful, beautiful time. There was no wars. The Depression came just before I got married.
Mm-hmm.
So those years I had between leaving school and getting married, I was very, very lucky.
Mm-hmm. That woman I mentioned earlier, Molly Ingram,
yes?
She's writing a book, and the chapter is on that. She's about your age, I think. And the chapter is a little bit older. Of this period, she's entitled Careless Rapture, because for her it was precisely the same idea.
Beautifully worded.
Oh, I thought it was
perfect. Good. Absolutely perfect. That's, you know, it was terrible really when I think back on it, but you never gave anyone a thought except yourself.
Mm-hmm.
And there was a lot of terrible poverty about. You know, the London slums were still going, and there were all these poor men who came back from the war and couldn't find work.
And don't forget the general strike of 26, which you probably were aware of, and it took place in...
I was aware of it because my brother, my oldest brother, was at college, and this was hilarious days for them. They tossed their books off to one side, and he went off as a bus driver.
Mm-hmm.
I think the college boys had a really good time.
It's like a game for them, wasn't it?
Yes, it was a game for them.
Did you see Bryce Edwards Revisited on TV?
Yes.
I thought they did that quite well, but it seems to have been... Well, how did you meet Mr. Fall?
You still got it all? Well, we always used to go away every summer. Somewhere, you know.
Usually to France, to Spain, or...?
No, Cornwall, Devonshire, somewhere like that. And my brothers by this time were probably working. So Mother and I went. We went down to Devonshire, down to Seaton, which was a very favourite. Of ours.
Mm-hmm.
And Mother was a great bridge player. So as soon as we hit Seaton, she was off to the bridge club.
Auction or contract?
I imagine it was auction bridge in those days.
I don't know what one is from the other, but I know there were two, and one was coming in to play at that time.
Yeah. Yeah. And one of her friends said, is your daughter going to the dance at the something hotel tonight? And mother said, oh no, she's suffering from a broken heart. She won't go anywhere. So mother came back, she said, you've got to go. I want to go out and play bridge, and I'm not going to leave you alone, moping. You've got to go to this dance. And I said, well, I'm going to go with. And this lady said, I know somebody who wants a partner for this dance. Come along. So reluctantly, I went. And this is when I was introduced to Joe.
Mm-hmm. And he was what,
He was a squadron leader.
Squadron leader.
Stationed at Worthydown, just outside Winchester. Mm-hmm.
And he was, what, about 15 years older than you?
Yes.
And this, did that have play any... What was your first impression of him, I should ask? Dashing in uniform?
No, he wasn't in uniform. You see, it was sort of... They only wore uniform on the...
On duty.
No, they... I thought perhaps he was a little old at the time.
Did he feel... Mm-hmm. The impression I have of most servicemen is that they don't wear civilian clothes too well.
No,
at least the clothes
right.
don't wear them
You're
too
right.
Well.
Yes, I think probably that was an impression I got.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, about 6 months later, we were married. So I can't have been too heartbroken, what do you think?
Was he shy? Because a lot of Canadian men tend to be.
Yes. No, I don't think so.
No?
No.
Was it first sight, or was it... Friendship?
Not really. No, we just saw a lot of each other. He'd come up and down. I think you could say he bulldozed me into it, really.
Mm-hmm.
You know, you can't say I was swept off my feet, but it was all sort of, you know, where we're going to get married. I don't even remember him proposing to me.
Mm. Well, a friend of mine has used a term to describe me as quiet persistence. And
yes, I think that probably is right.
Yes.
Yeah.
It sounds like Well, a friend of mine has used a term to describe me as quiet persistence. And
yes, I think that probably is right.
Yes.
Yeah.
It sounded louder.
Mother was horrified. Oh, you can't marry a man 15 years older than yourself.
Mm-hmm. And I guess a serviceman was another stigma as well. No?
My mother's sister's terribly Victorian, of course. But you can't let your daughter marry. You go around with an Air Force officer. You know, they had a terrible name in those days. Army, yes, and Navy, yes, but Air Force.
And the fact that it was a colonial, did that play any part?
It
sounds like
I don't
Paul
think
was
so.
Rather English, anyway. He probably had a bit of an accent.
Yes. I can remember my father saying, you know, I said to him, Joe and I want to have lunch with you. This was when Joe was going to tell him that we were going to get married.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, that's all right. My father was terribly, terribly particular about things. Wouldn't carry a parcel. Gentleman doesn't carry a parcel in the street. All he said was, well, just make sure he wears a tie.
Nothing more need be said about that.
You know, a man would come into a restaurant with his hat on. My father would say, it must be raining outside. Strange ways they had in the old days.
Strange and entertaining for us to look back on.
Oh, sure. I know, you know, when I talk to some of my grandchildren about my youth and my parents, they really find it very hard to believe.
About what? The staidness or the...
Yes, the things that I was allowed to do and the things I wasn't allowed to do.
Mm-hmm.
Their life is so free compared.
Well, your life was free in one sense. You didn't have to think about issues.
I never had to
issues.
Think about a thing. Meals
no.
were there. Everything was done. I had an old nanny. You've heard of English nannies, haven't you?
Mm-hmm.
She came to mother when I was 3 years old. And she stayed with mother until she died. She devoted her entire life to our family.
Mm-hmm.
And she did everything for me. Everything. When it was time for me to have clean clothes, she put them out for me. You know?
Yeah.
My grandchildren just can't believe it when I tell them. You never thought about it. You accepted
Mm-hmm. Just the way of life for that.
Yeah.
Now, I must say, you talk about freedom for young people today. I think it's, well, for me, I don't derive a great deal of freedom from being aware and conscious of all the issues, because in a way it sort of ties you down. And the youth that you have, sort of unhindered, is something that we don't have today. Though you were an example, a shining example of youth of that period, because most people of your age at that time probably weren't, well, for sure they didn't have the system.
The financial side, you mean?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah, well, a lot of the girls I went to school with had to take jobs, mm-hmm. you know. My father didn't believe in women working. He thought it was terrible they were taking the bread out of the mouths of men.
Well, I guess in a way that really fitted into the depression of the time, if a woman did take it. But things got so turned upside down because of the war. Women were actually in war work.
Right. They certainly were.
Yeah.
And I suppose if I hadn't been married come the Second War, I would probably have got to. You looking for me?
No. I'm upstairs. Is that Jane?
Yeah.
And Jill?
No more.
Oh, you're going to be in the workshop.
Yeah.
If Mark wasn't here, I'd say come upstairs. There might be a man up here, but now you don't, Mark, along with the whole thing.
I'm liberal. I'm open-minded.
Chris says he doesn't mind it. Chris, Bell, Mark. Jackson. And her granddaughter Jane. Chris is a Jew Vic.
Oh, yeah. What are you?
History. Are you the soccer player?
Yeah.
And Mark the artist.
Yeah.
Sort of. Is this another one you've made?
No.
Mark made a beautiful stained glass picture there. Show, Mark. Show. Doesn't want to show anyone. I think it's kind of fascinating. Yeah.
That's all that is.
Yeah. Very nice. Is Mum home?
No, not yet.
She went into town. Yes, she'd be awfully glad to see you because she said she was going to have to put her rubbers on and get out and pick all the cucumbers.
Oh.
Guess who's going to pick the cucumbers?
Right.
Is Jill coming up this weekend? Okay. Oh, sure. You're going to use that buzz saw?
Yeah.
All right. No responsibility. Cut your fingers off. Cut your fingers off. Don't come crying to me. Okay? I know. I'm scared of it, too. Michael and Julia are coming around today. Coming around for something. Yeah, they're bringing me a load of firewood. Mm-hmm.
They're bringing the grommets?
Oh, they're bringing the grommets. Sure. I know. What is she, 9?
No.
Oh, well. They're not all the fall-off runs like you, Jane.
Bye-bye. Perhaps I could just ask a few things about what it's like to be a service wife.
Oh, yes, certainly.
Especially for you having married for the first time, taken away from your family for the first time, probably. Where were you living when you first married?
Winchester.
Winchester.
Mm-hmm.
On base?
No, we didn't. There were only a certain number of married quarters on each RAF base.
Mm-hmm.
And if you're lucky, you got one. Well, I don't know that it was considered lucky. Mm-hmm. I think mostly people prefer to be able to rent their own accommodation and live in the local towns rather than live on the RAF bases.
Question of status, too, I should think, for a commanding officer to
mm-hmm.
be able to rent someplace and entertain there as well.
Right.
Yeah.
Yes, I enjoyed Winchester. We were there for a couple of years. Then we went to, Joe was posted to Henlow, and we lived in a little place called Letchworth Garden City. You've probably heard of Letchworth Garden City.
I love the name of it.
Isn't it beautiful? And it was nice. We rented a house there.
Mm-hmm.
Then our last posting in England was Upper Hayford.
Which is where?
Near Oxford.
Oh, indeed. Lovely country right there.
Yes, absolutely gorgeous. Now, It's an American base now.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. In fact, sometimes you see little bits in the newspaper about Upper Hayford and people demonstrating there.
What is it, a bomber base or just?
It was a bomber base, mm-hmm. just really out in the sticks, in between Oxford and Bicester. And we did live in married quarters there because Joe was the commanding officer there.
Mm-hmm.
So we lived in married quarters there. It was nice. You know, it's the usual thing. You get invited out by all the local people
mm-hmm.
because you're the commanding officer and his wife.
You have to attend all these
quite a lot of entertainment to do, and all the poor young officers had to make their duty call whether they wanted to or not. They come knocking at the front door at about 4 o'clock and sit there and give them a cup of tea.
Mm-hmm. And they had to do this. This was required, wasn't it?
Oh, absolutely. You know, we used to have these little visiting cards. Have you seen them?
Mm-hmm.
And then everyone who called on you, all the other officers' wives would call on you, and you'd have to go and call on them. It was a lot of malarkey, really.
Mm. But it kept you busy. It kept you occupied, didn't it?
I was busy enough when I was at Upper Hayford because I was about to produce my second child, who turned out to be twins. One of Joe's young officers phoned him up and said, "Congratulations, sir. Which one are you thinking of keeping?"
He kept them both, I hope.
Yes.
Well, did you like the idea of living in other people's homes or rented homes? You never really had a house that you could call your own?
Well, I think you sort of accepted this because you realized you were never going to live anywhere for more than 2 years.
Mm-hmm.
I've never particularly wanted to settle my roots down anywhere.
So you've lived here for the past, what, 40 years? Or not 40, but perhaps 35?
We came out in 44.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And even now, you know, I'd be happy to move off and not exactly live anywhere else, but I always want to be up and about and go someplace.
Mm-hmm.
It was the kind of life that suited me down to the ground, 2 years in one place, 2 years in another. As long as it was a golf course, I didn't mind where I went.
Mm. You're a golfer, are you?
Yeah. And then, of course, to be posted overseas to Malta was really a plum.
Mm-hmm. Had you done much? You said you had gone to Nigeria. Had you done much traveling before?
No, only just the continent. I'd been down south of France, and I'd been to Switzerland, and you know. That was all I had done.
Yeah. What was Malta like? 1938, was it? 37?
Malta in 38 was a very pleasant place. You know, absolutely full of British people because of the army and the navy and the air force all had their bases there. And the navy went and came in and went out again. And of course, Joe was commanding a big RAF station at Hel Far.
Was this a bomber station? Or?
No, it was the ground station for the squadrons from HMS Glorious, which was an aircraft carrier.
Mm-hmm.
So when they were not at sea, they were at Hel Far.
Mm-hmm.
When they were at sea, they were on the Glorious.
So the planes actually had two bases, so to speak.
That's right, yeah.
Either on land or on...
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Oh, the Hood and the Ark Royal and all those beautiful ships came into Malta. Malta was a fascinating place. Did you read Montserrat's book?
I've read The Cruel Sea, but I don't...
It was called The...
The Marlborough?
No. It began with a K, I think. Big Cap or something. Cap. With the word is the name of the priest.
Mm-hmm.
The something or other. Capalana? Capa. I don't know. You should read it. Well, I found it interesting having...
Haven't been there.
Yeah, it's Malta during the war.
Mm-hmm. I have seen a film called Malta Diary, not Malta, without Alec Guinness.
Oh, yes. Mm-hmm.
Malta Command.
Something like that.
That was beautiful, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. I like Alec Guinness.
Mm-hmm.
How about the Maltese? Did you have much to do with them?
Well, basically, you know, the only Maltese we met were the people who came in and cooked and bottle washed for you, and I found them very nice. Happy-go-lucky, rather like Italians, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Cheerful.
The Mediterranean.
That's right.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I think they had a pretty harsh life because they all had enormous families.
Mm-hmm.
And they all had to support the church very rigorously, you know? And I think they They were all pretty poorly off. I don't know how they manage now without the British going in and out and pretty well keeping the island afloat financially.
Haven't the British left?
I think they have.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Totally.
Malta's entirely independent now.
Yeah. Are they Greek Orthodox or Roman Catholic?
Roman Catholics.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And you know, very little grows on the island.
Lots of olives, I guess. Grapes?
No, very rocky soil there. In fact, at one time, a ship used to be allowed into the harbours there duty-free if they brought a load of soil, or, you know, something in this line.
Mm-hmm.
Very hard to grow things. Tomatoes, they used to grow a lot of tomatoes there. I don't remember any vineyards there. I really don't. But probably olives, yes, because I think average Maltese would live on tomatoes, bread, and olive oil.
Mm-hmm. Doesn't sound too...
No. Very little water. Water was somewhat restricted.
Mm-hmm.
I don't... No. No natural springs, I don't think, in Malta. Everyone used to trap the rainwater. They probably have desalinization now.
Mm-hmm.
I would think they would have to.
What sort of house did you live on in Malta?
Well, we had married quarters, the most beautiful house you ever clapped eyes on. Mm-hmm. Built out of this white Maltese stone.
Like chalk almost, or?
Yes, yes, just great big blocks of it. And they built quite a few married quarters. Oh, it was just a beautiful house.
Mm-hmm.
All the smithereens. Mm-hmm.
While you were still living in it?
No, no, I left before the war started.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. No, I left after the war started, but I left before the Italians came into the war.
Mm-hmm.
This was when Malta was destroyed,
yeah.
When the Italians came into the war. Which was...
It would have been...
May?
May or early June, was near the end of the Battle of France.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
That's right. So, there wasn't any air raids while I was there. So Joe went back afterwards. He took some pictures. He's actually got some photographs of the house we lived in.
Mm-hmm.
Flat. I know.
Heart-rendering.
Oh, it was a beautiful house. It really was. Mm-hmm.
So you went to, what, Alexandria after?
Then I went to Alexandria. Well, we lived in a rented house, you know, very pleasant. But
I've heard a lot of tales of Alexandria as a military base, how it was a dreadful city to live in. It was such a cosmopolitan and yet crude almost, the city.
Yes, well, I lived sort of on the outskirts and didn't know anybody.
Mm-hmm.
You know, Joe, when I got, as soon as I got to Alexandria, he was posted off to Gibraltar. And so I didn't really get to know anybody beyond the RAF friends I had out at Aboukir.
Mm-hmm.
So it was hard to judge. I did get to know some awfully nice Greek people. They were very pleasant and very hospitable.
Mm-hmm. The Greeks had been uprooted from the war, or?
No, they'd lived there all their lives.
Mm-hmm.
And there were some French people who lived quite close to me. They were very friendly, you know.
I guess they would have to be if they wanted to be accepted by the British population.
Yeah.
It almost forced friendliness.
Mm-hmm.
With the Vichy over in Syria, not too far away.
That's right.
Yeah.
It was just, you know, I lived in this little house, I had three small children, and my life really consisted of going to the beach with them. I did have a sergeant's daughter who looked after them for me,
mm-hmm.
Going out on the golf course every afternoon, late afternoon, it was too hot, clearly,
mm-hmm.
And coming home again, you know, I really didn't do very much,
mm-hmm.
and didn't get to meet many people. I went down to Cairo once or twice, which was interesting.
But Joe, you say, was at Gibraltar.
Joe was in Jib. And as soon as he got back, the Italians came into the war.
Mm-hmm.
And he was on some station, I can't remember what it was called. It wasn't an RAF base, but it was where they, an underground place where they tracked in the Italian aircraft coming he was only there for a little while. And of course, as soon as they started bombing Alexandria, the powers that be decided that service wives and children must get out, so they sent us off to Jerusalem.
Mm-hmm. Before I ask you about that, the French fleet was bombed off Oran
I guess July or August of 40. There were a number of French ships in Alexandria at that time as well. Do you remember anything about conflict arising there?
No, I don't.
So there was a French battleship there. I can't remember what the name of it was.
Joe might know. No, I don't remember.
It's an intriguing chapter in the war, that little episode.
Yeah, wasn't it?
It's frightening, actually, you start to think about it. The necessity in Churchill's eyes.
Well, of course. Yeah.
So you went to Jerusalem, did you?
Yeah.
Well, what was Jerusalem like in 1940?
Very quiet, of course. Very quiet.
Well, you still had the Jewish Zionist groups underground, didn't you, who were
presumably. But I always remember one thing I was told when I went there. The Arabs, Palestinians, I suppose they were wearing their red fezes, you know, these red fezes that they wear, and this was a sign that, you know, things, at the moment, they'd call a truce between the Arabs and the Jews, because they didn't wear their red fezes when there was too much conflict there, because it was too much of a target. And this was supposed to be a sign, when they put the red fezes back on their heads again, that they weren't afraid that the Jews were going to. I never saw any conflict at all when I was there.
Well, wasn't the case that a great many Jews joined up in the Jewish brigades in the British
forces?
Yes,
I believe they did.
Moshe Dayan, I think, was one who lost his eye fighting in Libya, I think.
Right.
As a city, though, did you find no tension between the Jews and...
No. There again, you know, I was sort of outside it. I had my little family, and I would go down and do a bit of shopping. I did go around and see all the different places.
Were there many other service lines?
Oh, hundreds of them.
Was it a case that was set out to just to be away from the bombing?
Yes.
I see. But wasn't the Vichy in Syria, which would be very close to Jerusalem, wasn't there the threat that they might attack?
Well, perhaps this is why we were all sent down to South Africa.
Oh, I see.
You know, I was in Jerusalem about 6 months.
Well, putting things together, at that time, the Italians and the first Germans would have been attacking towards the Suez Canal. So I guess if you were in Jerusalem, you would have been perhaps cut off. So I guess it was from both sides.
Yes, I think they just didn't want the responsibility of having all these hundreds of women and children. You know, there were a lot of wives in the Middle East when the war started.
Yeah.
So they sent us all down to South Africa.
You've had quite a few long trips between Malta and then down south.
Well,
what kind of ship did you travel south on?
This is when we went on the Duchess of Bedford. CP ship.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. It was quite pleasant, really. Except that I spent all the time in the isolation ward because my rotten little daughter had to get chickenpox. So they wouldn't let us stay with the other women and children.
All the children and you were in the isolation?
Yeah.
Let me say, there was privacy that time.
Well, it was all right. There were certain advantages in the isolation ward in as much as they had fresh water there. It was the only place on the ship where you got fresh water in your bath. But it was also the gun deck.
Uh-huh.
And the gun deck has no railings.
Mm-hmm.
Three small children.
Yeah.
I did complain to the doctor. I said, you know, it's all very well to put me in isolation, but you've got to give me something more than the gun deck for the kids to play on.
Mm-hmm.
So he did. He wrote on a little bit of the lower deck.
That's good.
Yeah.
Well, tell me about South Africa. What was it like?
Very pleasant in those days, because there was no black and white tension, you know. I think the blacks really hadn't organized themselves into any kind of political groups.
Mm-hmm.
We were, billeted, to start with, we were billeted in the hotels down the coast, south of Durban. They were all empty because it was out of season. Well, I and a friend decided we just couldn't do this hotel living forever and a day. You know, you're so stretching out for years. And we went up to Durban and visited some friends of mine in England. And they said, well, why don't you rent a house and come and live here? And this was a little village outside Durban called Isipingo. And this friend and I found this real derelict old house, but it was just fine. She had two kids and I had my three. Then we moved into this ramshackle old house. Had no heating, no plumbing, no running water. Nothing. And we lived together there for 3 years. It was just great. There was a very good little English boys' school for my eldest son. The others were all too young to go to school anyway. The beach was perfect. We were down on the beach swimming all day and every day.
Was there a golf course?
There was a golf course, yes, but after I'd been there about 9 months or a year, they converted it into an airfield. So that was the end of my golf.
No putting greens then?
No, nothing. Nothing. No.
Any thought of trying to get back to Britain or to Canada, or were you just content to sit there?
Well, you sort of accepted it, that you knew there was no earthly chance of you moving.
You were hardly a high-priority item to move, were you? Yeah.
They weren't going to move back to England.
And there were no threat from Germans or Japanese?
Well, I suppose there was always a chance. We had blackouts. You know, we had to have our windows all fixed so that nothing was shining out to sea, because
mm-hmm.
we lived actually quite high up, looking right out to sea. But, no, I don't think there was ever too much fear of being attacked. We just sort of, you know, sat there and brought the kids up and looked after the children. That was about all you could do.
Was it fairly pleasant? Lots of food?
Oh, yes. There was no rationing until about 6 months before I left, they started rationing gasoline for cars and butter. Those were about the only things.
Did the butter come from New Zealand, or was it...
I know, I imagine it was all local stuff, but probably some had been imported, yes. In fact, South Africa in those days imported practically everything, because you couldn't buy a piece of china or glassware, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They were winding up the galvanizing empty soup cans for mugs.
Indeed.
Yes. But there was far less shortages there than there were in England or
mm-hmm.
anywhere else.
I also, from what I understand, the South Africans highly mobilized their population in the same way that Britain did, and that most of the men of service age, even more so than England, were in the desert or...
I don't think they had conscription.
It was voluntary.
In South Africa. Because, you know, there was a lot of anti-British feeling even in those days.
Well, Smuts was still alive, wasn't it?
Yes. Mm. And a lot of the Boers had kindlier feelings towards Germans than they did towards the English.
Still in the 1940s?
Oh, yes. But you see, where I was living, Natal is rather like BC.
Mm-hmm.
Very British. And then when you get up to the Orange Free State and Transvaal, then you begin getting into the Boer country.
But hadn't the Boers, before the Boer War, say the mid-century, the big Boer trek, they had left Natal and gone
mm-hmm.
north, hadn't they?
Yes.
So Natal really was British, so you
mm-hmm.
didn't have
mm-hmm.
the problems involved.
No.
Not at all. Mm-hmm. So you say there for 3 happy years.
Yes, they were reasonably happy. You know, carefree again, really.
Were you in constant communication with Mr. Fall?
Oh, yes. Yes, we got air letters back and forth. I think probably took a week or so,
mm-hmm.
you know, to get mail back and forth, but not too long.
So you knew where he was, you knew he was okay,
oh, yes.
and the
mm-hmm.
same with you again.
Yeah. The only times we used to get worried was when there was a full moon, because this is when the Germans used to get after the Suez Canal, used to bomb the Suez Canal.
Mm-hmm. And he was back in Egypt with you at this time?
Yeah.
Yeah.
The big RAF base he was commanding was right on the Suez Canal.
And that was a hot spot, wasn't it?
Mm, it was when there was a full moon.
Yeah.
But he never complained about having a lot of...
Were his letters pretty much on a personal basis?
Well, yes. He couldn't tell me what he was doing, you know. He just wrote, and all he wanted to know was how the kids were, because he missed a rather nice part of the children's lives. Stuart was 5, I suppose, when we left, and he was at least 8 when we got to Canada.
Mm-hmm.
And the twins were 2. And they must have been 2.5 because they were going to school. They were 6 when we got to Canada. So he missed quite a big chunk there.
They're growing up.
Yeah.
Yeah. But you joined up with them again in what, 1944?
1943. I came to Manitoba in October 1943. That's right. And I thought, oh.
Even
what
worse than Natal?
Oh. Carberry, Manitoba. No plumbing. no running water, and that cold.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, I thought, this is the end. There's one thing about it, I knew I wasn't going to stay there.
Mm.
Have you ever been to any of those prairie towns?
A few in Alberta, but nothing in Manitoba. Manitoba here is worse, much more desolate, cold.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
It's just south of Winnipeg.
Now you've got me there.
Mm.
Brandon was the nearest town.
We slightly south, I think.
Yeah. I would say it was probably south.
Mm-hmm. How long were you?
We were there, I was there just over a year, because we actually came out here, Carberry, as a training school, folded up.
Mm-hmm.
And we actually landed out here about 2 weeks before Christmas in 1944.
So a full year on the prairies.
Mm. A full year, yeah.
That must have been quite an eye-opening experience for you. Well, I suppose you've been through a number of them, Malta, Alexandria, Jerusalem,
yeah. I think the worst side of it, as far as I was concerned, because, of course, in South Africa we had lots of little native girls,
mm-hmm.
you know, and Malta, there was lots of help around the house. Land out in Carberry, Manitoba, with no help,
mm-hmm.
and kindling to chop.
Which you had to do all yourself?
Well, I got the kids to do it. They sliced the fingers off, but they did it. And, you know, I'd never see, believe it or not when I tell you, I have never seen a washing machine in my life.
Indeed.
You know, we sent the laundry out at home.
Mm-hmm. Or you had other people.
In South Africa, the natives did it, banging it on a slab of stone. You know?
Mm-hmm.
I'd never seen a washing machine.
And this was the old ringer kind?
Well, no, they were, all these people had electric washing machines. I couldn't believe it.
Mm-hmm.
They had no running water. They had to heat all the water, and yet they had electric washing machines. I couldn't sort of figure life out at all. What a strange
way of doing things.
Doing things, yes. And then you sort of took a little trip down the end of the pathway.
To the washroom.
To the lab, yeah.
Nothing built in.
And then in the winter, the buckets were moved into the house.
Just to keep them.
And Dan, the lavatory man, would come around and, you know, this absolutely horrifying. But I wouldn't, I suppose.